Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. War got a big workout this week. The president is stumping hard for it. Newt Gingrich is howling for it. Not just war, but World War III. Not to accommodate, understand, or negotiate, he wrote this week, but to defeat enemies around the world. 84-year-old people's historian Howard Zinn has a radically different view. The author of The People's History of the United States looks back on all the wars since World War II and says war isn't working anymore. It didn't work for the United States in Vietnam, for the Soviets in Afghanistan. It didn't work for Israel in Lebanon, he says. It isn't working for the U.S. in Iraq. And it won't work, says Zinn, against terrorism. Up next on Point, people's historian Howard Zinn says war is not the answer. Joining me now from northeastern Massachusetts is Howard Zinn, distinguished historian, professor emeritus at Boston University. He's a decorated World War II bombardier. He says war since then just hasn't worked. Howard Zinn, welcome and thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Tom.
You've written in the last week an op-ed piece for the Boston Globe, headline, War is Not the Solution for Terrorism. Give us your argument.
Well, I was trying to make two points, and of course I was making this right after Israel's experience with Lebanon and with the continuing disastrous news from Iraq. And the two points I was trying to make, I always say trying to make because I'd never assume I'm really making them, right? But the two points were, one, that war, even from the point of view of the war makers, is impractical, doesn't work, doesn't achieve their objectives. And two, and this is more important, that war, by its very nature, by the technology of war as it has developed, war is inevitably the indiscriminate killing of innocent people. And so I elaborate a little on both of these points. You know, on the matter of the practicality of war, I pointed to the fact that, you know, the claim is that we have been in Iraq for 3 years we are bringing democracy to Iraq, and anybody who reads the headlines every day knows we have not brought democracy to Iraq. We have brought chaos and continuing violence. I mean, of course, there's a real question as to whether the intention of the Bush administration is to bring democracy to Iraq. But I'm assuming, you know, for the moment, yes, they mean to do that. We're not doing it. There's a history of that. And I didn't go into that in my op-ed piece, but there is a history of the United States claiming to bring democracy or civilization or something good to other people in the world that we have made war on. And what that history shows very clearly is that we have not brought democracy to these countries. I mean, you could go back to the Mexican War where we claimed we're bringing civilization to the Mexicans and so on. Of course, it was nonsense. The Spanish-American War, we're liberating the Cubans. Well, we liberated them from Spain, but not from ourselves. And Cuba became a succession of military dictatorships open to American corporate profits, United Fruit and banks and so on. We had a long war in the Philippines in which hundreds of thousands of people were killed. We did not bring democracy to the Philippines. We brought dictatorship after dictatorship until really very recently, people will remember the Marcos dictatorship with the United States supported. And then there were all those military forays into Central America, maybe not properly called wars because there was no real opposition or just the Marines landing in, you know, Nicaragua and Honduras and Guatemala and Cuba. And did we bring democracy to those places? No. How? And, of course, we have the most recent, more recent Vietnam again. Were we fighting for democracy in Vietnam? No, there's an underlying motive behind the claims of democracy. It has nothing to do with democracy. It has to do with imperial expansion. It has to do with corporate profit. After all, these are profitable ventures for corporations. The arms industry makes a lot of money from these wars. And the government, in its secret memos, which it doesn't reveal to the public, doesn't talk about democracy and liberty. I'm thinking now of the memos that were disclosed in the Pentagon Papers as with the United States were getting involved in Vietnam. Those memos did not talk of liberty and democracy. They talked of tin, rubber, and oil. So, you know, what are we accomplishing in Iraq, even from the point of view of our claim?
Howard Zinn, I wish we could just put democracy aside for a moment.
Okay,
because
sure.
After it's an important point because it's the wrapper that a lot comes in. And,
yes.
But since 9/11, I think there's a more fundamental word, and you haven't mentioned it yet, and it is security, safety, national security.
Oh.
People saw the towers come down on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
They said, we've got to do something here. And right now, as you well know, the national conversation has a range of impulses in it that is very broad. We could not put you in the middle of it. At the other end, you've got someone like Newt Gingrich writing in the Wall Street Journal this week, clamoring for World War III, saying we're in it, we've got to recognize that, a kind of Churchillian call to say we're in it, and we've got to go for it, not to accommodate, not to understand, but to defeat, How does, in your view, how does national security sit if you're going to say no war? What does the history say there? You said in your recent essay, the history of wars fought since the end of World War II reveals the futility of large-scale violence. Are you saying even when the country's fundamental security is at risk, war's not the answer?
Well, the question is whether the wars that we have fought have increased or decreased our security. And I'm arguing that the wars that we have fought have not increased our security. In what way did a war in Vietnam with all that tremendous toll of human life increase the security of the United States? In what way did the war in Afghanistan or the war in Iraq increase our security? I would argue the opposite. I would argue that the security of the United States is at its lowest point, exactly at the point where it has fought the most wars, where it has built up the greatest arms arsenal, the greatest nuclear arsenal, and that our security is at its lowest point. And you can tell that by the alarms and by the security measures and by the warnings and by the orange signals and the yellow and no, we are not more secure. One of the reasons we're not more secure is we have turned the world against us. The world, remember, we went into Iraq with the world against us. There were demonstrations on the eve of our war in Iraq all across the world. 15 million people demonstrated across the world. Again, we have become the bully of the world. That's how we are seen. That does not increase our security. Terrorism is the word that Bush uses again and again and again. I mean, he can't stop using it because he finds it useful. You know, terrorism terrorizes people.
But maybe he uses it because it exists, because we saw it. We saw it in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. We saw it in Washington. We saw it in a field in Pennsylvania.
It exists, absolutely. Terrorists exist. Terrorism exists. But the question is, what do you do about terrorism? Do you make war on a country? I mean, let's go back to 9/11. This terrible thing happens, an act of terrorism, and roughly 3,000 people die. And what is Bush's reaction? His reaction is to declare a war on terrorism and to invade and bomb Afghanistan.
He said that war was being made on the United States and war was the proper response.
Yeah, but who was making war on the United States? Was Afghanistan making war on the United States? Was Afghanistan in any position to make war on anyone?
Just as a matter of practical fact, yeah. Afghanistan was effectively hosting al-Qaeda. The towers in New York did come down. There were al-Qaeda terrorists on those planes. I mean,
yes,
is that not true?
Most of those terrorists were from Saudi Arabia. And not from Afghanistan. And it's true that probably Osama bin Laden was hiding in Afghanistan, although I remember at one time Afghanistan offered to give him up if the United States would sort of talk about it and negotiate and have a public trial and so on. The United States refused. But the point is the United States did not take action specifically against Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda. Instead, it did, and this is the point about war, instead of focusing its attention on the perpetrators of that crime, it bombed Afghanistan. It did not know where al-Qaeda was. It did not know where Osama bin Laden was. It was as if police discovering that there was a criminal hiding in a neighborhood, not knowing where the criminal was, just decided to bomb the whole neighborhood. So they kill the people in the neighborhood. They still haven't found the criminal.
And here's the point at which you take a very big turn. You say war on terrorism is a contradiction in terms, Howard Zinn, because you say war itself, because of that indiscriminate quality of it, because of the death of civilians, war itself is terrorism.
Exactly. War is terrorism. Let's define terrorism. If terrorism, and I think this is a reasonable definition, if terrorism is the killing of innocent people for some presumed cause, then obviously the people who committed the acts of 9/11 are terrorists. Suicide bombers who kill innocent people in the Middle East are terrorists. But a government that bombs villages, towns, cities, drops bombs on cars, destroys houses, and kills thousands and thousands of innocent people who are not terrorists, who had nothing to do with terrorism, that is terrorism. Not only that, war is terrorism on a far larger scale than any band of terrorists like al-Qaeda can summon up.
William is calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, William. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Certainly. What do you think, William?
Well, I think Dr. Zinn is a little too absolutist for me. I think there are certainly times when war is applicable and necessary. If we were all living in Israel and we had Hezbollah and, of course, the supporters of Hezbollah, Iran, acquiring a nuclear weapon, I'm sure they would use it on us, and I'm sure we'd be vaporized. Therefore, some sort of preemptive action, I think, would certainly be appropriate, and war would be appropriate, would it not?
Howard Zinn, the existential threat. William says Israel feels it. There are plenty who say the United States should see it in al-Qaeda. How does your philosophy, your view, stand next to an existential threat, or do you believe it's there?
I think that the possession of nuclear weapons is a threat to the world. Any country that possesses it is a danger to the world. But the facts are that we went into Iraq when Iraq was at least 5 years away from developing one nuclear weapon. One nuclear weapon. The United States has 10,000 nuclear weapons. The United States is the only country in history that has used nuclear weapons. Israel has 200 at least nuclear weapons. And what I'm suggesting is that the fact that Iraq might have had a nuclear weapon in 5 years, the fact that Iran might have, and they certainly aren't getting it right away, the fact that Iran might have a nuclear weapon in, who knows, 5 to 10 years, is a way of getting the public hysterical about their nuclear weapons and having them forget about ours. And to me, it's an excuse for extending the power of the governments that use that excuse. And the Bush administration has used fear as a way of getting support for the war. First, for the war in Afghanistan. Second, for the war in Iraq. The fear of terrorism, the fear of nuclear bomb. Remember, Condoleezza Rice spoke about the mushroom cloud. Now, they were enormously exaggerating the threat. I mean, think of it. Was Iraq, even if Iraq, by the way, and I have not heard anybody ask this question, what if Iraq had weapons of mass destruction? Would that justify then an invasion of Iraq and the killing of 100,000 people or whatever the number is in Iraq?
If they could tuck a nuclear weapon into a suitcase, and that's what we were told, and it could kill millions in the United States, then, I mean, to Williams' fundamental point, Williams says he hears, in your view, an absolutist, absolutist, Howard Zinn, and I guess that's a kind of absolute pacifism, I guess, he's hearing there. Well, are you an absolute pacifist?
No. No, I'm not. And I'll explain that in a minute. But let me say something about the suitcase. Whether people, terrorists, can put a nuclear weapon in a suitcase and bring it into the United States is not stopped by our bombing a whole country. The two have nothing to do with one another.
Well, let's say Iran is working on nuclear technology. Let's say they don't have missiles to deliver it, but let's just say hypothetically that they got far enough along that they could put it in a suitcase. Well,
but they're not the only ones who can put it in a suitcase. There are terrorist groups all over the world, and nuclear technology is available in many, many parts of the world. And what we have done is created a scare for the American people. These countries, these little countries that talk about that might someday develop a nuclear weapon, they are not in a position to threaten or deliver nuclear weapons. They are trying to survive. They are trying to use the possibility of nuclear weapons as a bargaining point to get sanctions lifted on them, to get economic support. I mean, this is the story with North Korea and Iran.
So when William raises Iran's nukes, and you point back to the thousands of nuclear weapons in the United States, are you suggesting by that if we put ours down, they will put theirs down? Is that your fundamental belief?
Well, I don't know what will happen. I know this, that by our possessing 10,000 nuclear weapons, it makes us hypocrites in insisting that other countries may not get one. There are 8 countries in the world that have nuclear weapons. And the United States signed the Anti-Proliferation Treaty, the treaty against nuclear proliferation. And that treaty says that other countries may not get nuclear weapons, but it's also true that the treaty says that the countries that have nuclear weapons should start divesting themselves of nuclear weapons. The United States and the other nuclear powers have not done that. What I'm suggesting is there's enormous disproportion in the attention paid to the possibility of one nuclear weapon in Iraq or Iran and the reality of the wars. The nuclear weapon that might come about in the future is one thing, but the present reality is that we have killed huge numbers of people by scaring people and making false claims, and you know how many false claims were made about Iraq.
Well, let me turn to William in Charleston. William, is Howard Zinn bringing you around here at all or not?
Well, I have so many counterpoints, I don't know where to begin. First of all, we talked about early on about the yield of weapons and how we have cacheted thousands of weapons.
10,000 here, fewer there. Yes, sorry.
All of ours are in check. Israel's are in check. But Iran says, you know, we're going to vaporize you, Iran. And oh, by the way, they'll eventually get to, as I heard this morning, middle-sized Satan, which will be Europe, and then the great Satan, us, at some point in time, if they can. Now, when somebody's pointing a gun at your head, surely you're going to strike back. I mean, it is senseless to sit there and get your brains blown out. It just doesn't wash.
William, we've got it. Thank you for your call. Howard Zinn?
Yeah, there's no gun pointed at our head.
What about a gun in the making?
There are guns in the making.
Well?
Our bombs are not in the making. This is the point about war. And this is the point about preemptive war. War is the killing of huge numbers of people in the present against some possibility that something terrible may happen in the future. And my argument is that it is a ploy. It is a device used by the government to get us into war and to justify war. After all, What is our aim in the Middle East? Does our aim in the Middle East have to do with nuclear weapons? Our aim in the Middle East has to do with control. It has to do with military bases. It has to do with oil. And everything else about terrorism and nuclear bombs is simply a way of trying to justify to the American people a very cruel policy of making war. And it is not making us more secure. That's an important point. It is, in fact, diminishing our security, not just by arousing hostility, creating more terrorists in the Middle East and elsewhere, not just by that. It is making our country less of a model to other countries in the world. Our real security in this country lies in being a model for the rest of the world, a model in healthcare, a model in education. By spending $400, $500 billion a year on arms, by making war again and again, we are starving our health system, starving our education. I mean, I just read where the administration has cut down on funds for cultural programs for deaf people. I mean, there's no money for human needs when you are going to be in incessant war.
Howard Zinn, I'm not sure you're bringing William around, but let's turn to Pete in Leesville, South Carolina. Pete, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'd just like to factor in also an excellent film called Why We Fight that came out a few months back. That basically brings out the whole idea that we are a military-industrial complex, and beyond what we're talking about, there's a whole engine of contractors and people out there. We have a vice president who's a military contractor. There's a whole engine working to fuel all these wars. There's congressional districts out there where people are employed making all these weapons, and this all factors in as something that the whole idea to keep us in business is to make sure there's wars out there so all these defense contractors and this everything keeps running. This Why We Fight movie does an excellent job of demonstrating
so
that.
So William doesn't buy it, but you, Pete, in Leesville, South Carolina, think Howard Zinn may be onto something here. I want to welcome another voice into our conversation for a few minutes, if I may. Joining us from Washington is David Frum. He's resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, former special assistant and speechwriter to President George W. Bush, contributing editor at the National Review, author of An End to Evil, How to Win the War on Terror. David Frum, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Here we are with Howard Zinn, author of A People's History of the United States, venerated by many, and he's out in the last week in an essay saying, war is not a solution for terrorism. He points to wars since World War II and says, you know, just look at the history. They're not working anymore. I know you come from a very different place, David Frum. You don't share a philosophy in many ways with Howard Zinn, but what about at the practical level? He says, look, it's not working.
Well, as my co-author Richard Pearl often jokes when people say that, military action does have a rather better record of solving international problems than, say, social work does. The core of the pacifist argument that Howard Zinn is advocating, and I know that as an old leftist, he's not always a pacifist, but in this argument, he is one. The core of that is it asserts that a government, like an elected government like that of the United States, has no more responsibility to protect its own people than it does to protect other populations, including populations of enemy nations. Democracy begins with elected governments. Elected governments have responsibilities to the people who elect them. Their first responsibility is to protect those people. So as war is how you protect yourself against foreign violent enemies, such enemies exist. And I think one of the core of Mr. Zinn's argument is that a government is doing a bad job if it kills more of its enemies than it loses of its own population.
But what about those who aren't enemies? He says, look, terrorism is terrorism because it kills innocents. But war kills innocents. So war, Howard Zinn says, is terrorism.
Well, that's not quite right. And it's sort of it's like one of these dorm room arguments you remember from college.
He's well out of the dorm room and a former bombardier, so we've got to give him that credit.
A legitimate government, an elected government, to protect its people, uses military action, and inadvertently, but is a foreseeable but inadvertent and undesired consequence that innocents are hurt. That is a deplorable thing. It's a very different thing from a terrorist regime whose purpose is to kill civilians, that defies the rules of war that have been negotiated over a couple of centuries now to put limits on the conflict. A group like Al-Qaeda, like the terrorists in Iraq, like the terrorists of Hamas and Hezbollah, they are international criminals. And the fact that they take hostages and hide behind civilians should not give them immunity. And the fact that they are willing to use these atrocious tactics should make them should make it more urgent to destroy them, not less.
Mm. Howard Zinn, People's Historian, how do you respond?
Well, you know, I've heard that argument many times about the difference between those terrorists and our terrorists. And that is, they deliberately kill people. When we kill people, it's inadvertent. Well, I don't accept that. When you drop bombs on people, and 80 to 90% of them are innocent people, and you say, well, I didn't mean to do it, you're deceiving yourself. The killing of innocent people in bombing is inevitable. And I make the point in that op-ed piece last Saturday that there's a difference between – there's something in between deliberate and accidental. And the word is inevitable. I mean, here, look at this and it makes you sort of think about it. In Vietnam, we killed probably a million people, a million civilians with our bombing. And we the claim was, well, we didn't mean to do it. It was inadvertent. So here they kill 3,000 people. That's deliberate, and that's terrorism. We kill a million people in Vietnam, and we call it inadvertent. I say there's no moral distinction that, yes, war is terrorism. And when you talk about criminal acts, I believe that Saddam Hussein has committed criminal acts. Al-Qaeda has committed criminal acts. George Bush has created criminal acts. It is a crime, and this is what the Nuremberg tribunal came to the conclusion after World War II. It is a crime to wage aggressive war against another country. This is what we have done. We did it in Afghanistan. We're doing now in Iraq. And therefore, George Bush is as much a war criminal as Saddam Hussein or Osama bin Laden.
I'm sure you'll get debate on that, but David Frum, we just have you for another minute. Here there's moral lines and practical lines.
Someone who believes that George Bush is as bad as Osama bin Laden must believe, because it's the basic logic, that Osama bin Laden is no worse than George Bush, if they're moral equivalents. That means you don't really take Osama bin Laden very seriously.
What about General John Abizaid, U.S. CENTCOM commander? He's been saying recently...
Let me just finish
yeah,
this point.
Yeah.
Because it's really, I have to say, it is morally deaf. It is morally blind. And I think that what you see here is that pacifism presents itself as an argument of moral acuteness, of extreme sensitivity to innocent life. What it really is one of moral blindness, where nothing is that bad. You know, Osama bin Laden is... He's just another George Bush. And if you believe that, you have no regard for innocent human life. And what it is an expression of hatred of the legitimate authorities of the United States, couched in the defense of innocent human life elsewhere. If you care for innocent human life, you will, of course, want to uproot the Saddam Husseins and the Osama bin Ladens. And if you want to score your points against George Bush, that just tells you how little regard you have for human life anywhere.
David Frum, I know we just have you for another minute. Let me ask you about one thing. General John Abizaid, interviewed at length and profiled in the Wall Street Journal just in the last few days, and himself sounding remarkably jaundiced or tentative about the limits of military power's effectiveness, saying military power can gain us time, but that's about it. This is the lead U.S. general in the Middle East. Howard Zinn makes a moral argument, but also a practical one. He says, look, if you look back on the history since World War II, it's just not working.
Look, there are limits to military power. And the art of statesmanship is to recognize them. But to say that military power has limits is a different thing from saying it has no usefulness at all. Ultimately, for the external world is a reality. Foreigners exist, and they do things often for their own reasons. And one of the things they sometimes do is choose for their own reasons to attack the United States and other democratic countries. And when that happens, acknowledging the limits of military power, you must defend yourself. And I hope that the leaders of this country and other democracies, when they do defend themselves, will do so with maximum effectiveness and will ensure that the enemies of the United States suffer many, many more casualties than the citizens of the United States. That's you know, you should go to war reluctantly, but when you go to war, you should hit as hard as you can and as effectively as you can.
Howard Zinn, David Frum says, you know, you claim the moral high ground, but at the end of the day, this is moral deafness versus moral acuity. The external world is a reality, and to deny the damage that could be done is moral deafness.
Mm. Well, you know, he talks about defending ourselves. We are not defending ourselves by making war. That is not a way of making our country more secure. And as I've said, it makes us less secure. It creates more enemies. All the indications are that terrorism, the number of terrorists has grown in the world and in the Middle East ever since the United States began its wars in the Middle East. And so from the point of view of defending ourselves, war has the opposite effect. It makes us more insecure. It creates greater dangers. And I would argue that Bush has put our country in great danger as a result of going to war. And I think we need to think about countries that do not face terrorism. There are countries around the world, democratic countries, they don't have to worry about terrorism. And why is that? Because they are not great bullying powers that send their armies around the world, that establish military bases elsewhere. After all, if you look at the report of the 9/11 Commission, this is the official commission, and the chairman, one of the chairmen of the commission says, you know, this 9/11, what seems to be somewhere at the root of it is American foreign policy, American military invention, intervention in American bases in the world. That should be taken seriously. If the United States was no longer a bullying military power, we would not be in the kind of danger we are in today.
David Frum, a final thought?
Tell it to the Danes. Tell it to the Danes. The Danes are in danger of terrorism. The Dutch have assassinations in the streets of the Netherlands. This summer, the Canadian authorities arrested plotters who intended to detonate a giant bomb at the central intersection of Toronto, blowing up all the bank towers and blinding the people inside with shards of glass. The Danes, the Dutch, the Canadians, they're under threat, too. The democratic world is under threat. And thank God the United States is there with military power to protect not only Americans, but all the citizens of the democratic powers and people with democratic values around the world, including those trapped under the government of some pretty hideous regimes like the regime in Iran.
David Frum, author of An End to Evil. David Frum, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Lamar's calling from Boston. Hi, Lamar. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I agree with Howard Zinn. I think he's a realist. I've given this a lot of thought. And my question essentially was, why does the U.S. government react to Iran's rhetoric about having nuclear weapons? So what? I mean, if they had them, they're not going to use them. They're not crazy. They're not going to be evaporated by retaliation. I think.
Well, so you say, but the argument is that they could pass it to a third party. It shows up in Manhattan or Washington. No fingerprints.
I don't think so. I think that's part of the rhetoric by the Bush administration. I mean, look at Israel. They're probably the largest terrorist organization in the world. And they have a nuclear weapon.
The largest, I mean, it's a government. It's a state with people and a democracy, a terrorist organization?
Yes, I think it's similar to the U.S. I think the U.S., and I'm following along the lines of Howard Zinn saying that war is the largest expression of terrorism, and I agree. And if you're, and take Vietnam, for example. I was in the military in the early 70s, and that's what I thought then. That's terrorism on a huge scale.
David Frum, I can hear him saying here, Lamar, well, you're adopting the very hateful attitude toward your own country or toward Israel that Frum was describing.
No, I think Frum and Richard Pearl are madmen. I think they're so caught up in their own egos and their own selfish needs, they're not looking at people in the world. And I agree, we're less safe now than we were before 9/11, which that didn't surprise me because I've been following events since the 93 bombing of the World Trade Center.
Lamar, we've got it, and thanks very much. Peggy's calling from Brookline, Massachusetts. Hi, Peggy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just would like to, calling to applaud Howard Zinn. I think that we need more people speaking out against war, but I think that his point of comparing George Bush to Osama bin Laden does not advance the cause of his argument, and I I think that the Bush administration has done more harm to this country than any other president in history. But I'd like to make two quick points.
Certainly.
I think that if we would stop and look at the amount of money that has been made by the military contractors in this preemptive war against Iraq, and if we had put that money into Afghanistan to help rebuild that country, that we would have won. We would be winning the hearts of the people in the Muslim world instead of breaking the hearts.
Yeah, that's a big one to think about. And your second point, Peggy?
My second point is I think that we need to look at Lebanon and Hezbollah, and that, again, Israel has, I think, created more harm to their citizens, because I would like to see Israel and the United States helping to rebuild Lebanon the way that Hezbollah is.
Peggy, we've got it, and thanks for your call. Howard Zinn, at the heart of it there, Peggy says, I mean, she's giving you applause, but she's saying when you equate George Bush and Osama bin Laden, you're doing your own argument no favor.
All right. Well, I accept what she says. That is, they're two different situations, two different people. But I was just trying to make the point that, and against what Mr. Frum says, no, I don't minimize the evil of Osama bin Laden, nor do I minimize the evil of George Bush. I was just trying to make the point that there are all kinds of war criminals and all kinds of people who are responsible for terrorism, and Osama bin Laden is one of them. George Bush is another.
What about the Danes and the Canadians, David Frum pointed to? They have had their own attacks, certainly.
Well, they haven't. Yeah, nothing like what the United States experienced on 9/11. And I would argue that the best thing we can do if we want to do something about terrorism is to stop being a war-making nation. The root of the terrorism against us has to do with the American troops stationed all through the Middle East, with the oil companies and the government's hunger to control oil. It has to do with business, and I think that the best thing we can do is to become a different kind of country, a country that devotes its resources to health, education, taking care of children, and I mean, when you think of what could be done.
But when you say the U.S. should back away from that, we understand that argument. But let's say if the U.S. is, as you describe it, and you're painting a kind of greedy, power-projecting picture there. Well, Americans are human. We're not the only humans on the planet. I mean, if the United States should stand down from that posture, as you describe it, does that mean everybody will hold hands and play nice and be good?
No, of course not. But we're not helping, no. There will not be a perfect situation, but we are making things worse than they possibly could be. They may always be troublemakers and even acts of terrorism and all sorts of things happening in the world. And what I'm saying is that our going to war has not helped and will not help any of those situations, only make them worse.
Let me take a call from Augusta, Georgia. Anna's calling. Hi, Anna.
Hello. Thank you so much. Great debate. I have a few issues.
Mm-hmm.
If we'd gone in with a police action instead of declaring war on a whole nation, then we wouldn't be in this mess. Okay.
In Iraq or Afghanistan, where?
In Afghanistan and also Iraq. Things like what we're doing in Iraq, I'm not exactly sure. Those lines have been so blurred that I'm so perplexed that I really want our troops home. And as far as throwing democracy on these people, that's a cradle of civilization. We're upstarts. We've only been around less than, 250 years?
But even a cradle can get itself into a corner. Can we take democracy to Iraq with the American military?
I do understand. No, you can't shove democracy with a gun or a bomb. Who wants that? You show them by example. You show how democracy works. We are a broken country ourselves. We are not taking care of our own people. And it is not, well, look at, I mean, just let's throw this out there, New Orleans. I mean, we've got a whole group of people who are homeless. and we can't take care of ourselves, but yet we're trying to tell them, oh, yes, you need democracy.
Anna, we've got it. We appreciate your call. Let me turn to Matt in Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Matt. You're on the air.
How you doing today, folks?
We're all right. What do you think, Matt?
My question to the professor is, he was a bombardier during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So if the argument I'm saying is, and I don't advocate the firebombing of any other places, but it seems to be after World War II, we have not fought a war with any conviction to win the war. And you can't compare this to Vietnam or Korea, because the firebombing of Dresden, that was no military target. Firebombing Tokyo, that was not a military target per se. So what we destroyed these people's will to fight. And if you look at, like, Osama bin Laden and the Islamic terrorists, fascists, whatever you want to call them, it's a slight comparison to the way the Japanese were during World War II, where their emperor was God, kind of the same lines. We're fighting this with a hand tied behind our back.
So you're saying the problem is not too much war, but too little? You want total war? You think that's the way to go, Matt?
Total war, not hold Newt Gingrich thing with World War III, because I don't buy that. But I'm saying is that fighting a half war that we seem to be doing doesn't work.
Howard Zinn, what do you say to Matt?
Well, yeah, fighting a half war doesn't work. Fighting a total war kills enormous numbers of innocent people. And therefore, the answer is not a half a war. The answer is no war.
There it is. If you take the formula, there's Howard Zinn's. Dean's calling from Hyde Park, Massachusetts. Hi, Dean, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just first want to say, Dr. Zinn, thank you for the work you've done and for the good work that you continue to do. I just want to go to this dorm room debate between war versus terrorism. On one side, we have Dr. Zinn saying that war equals terrorism, and then we have David Frum saying, no, there's a distinction that war is the inadvertent killing, whereas terrorism is the deliberate targeting of civilians.
Mm.
Even if we accept that distinction, which may be a valid one, I think we need then to recognize that the single greatest act of terrorism that was ever committed in the history of this planet was committed by the United States when we dropped atomic bombs on the civilian population of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That was terrorism even by David Frum's definition. That's my only point. Thank you very much.
Dean, thanks for calling. Let me get another call. Stuart is calling from Walpole, Massachusetts. Hi, Stuart. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with the caller, Matt, a couple of calls ago. My problem with the whole pacifist point of view is that it, in my view, empowers the terrorists. The rhetoric that Mr. Zinn gives us today will appear on the next Osama bin Laden tape. They get their talking points from the pacifists in the West.
Would it work the opposite way around if the United States was giving the positive messages that Howard Zinn wants? Would that reflect back to us from the terror community? Would it become more positive?
Well, my question is, would it have worked with Hitler? Would it have worked with Imperial Japan?
Let us pick it up. Our time is short. Howard Zinn, you were there with Hitler and Imperial Japan. Would this have worked?
Well, you know, the Hitler, World War II is a very convenient historical moment to bring up because there was a moral core to World War II. There's no moral core to the wars that we have fought since World War II. Here's something to consider about World War II. World War II, we faced the greatest military power in the world, Hitler, who was invading and attacking and bombing other countries. Now, what country today matches that description? A huge military power that is invading smaller and weaker countries. We match that. The United States matches that description. This is not World War II. For Bush and Cheney and the others to bring up Hitler is totally misguided and a deliberate attempt to take whatever moral capital we gained in World War II and plaster it on wars that are fought for very ignoble reasons, power, imperial expansion, oil, resources, the profits of business. You know, there was a placard put up during the Vietnam War, put up by some, designed by some well-known artist, a very simple placard that said, "War is good for business." invest your son. Very chilling. And those sons and daughters now that have died or have lost limbs are the victims of George Bush's foreign policy.
Howard Zinn, we've just got a few seconds. You're 84 now. You've watched for a long time. In a word, is America open to your argument? Is it ever going to follow the Zinn path?
More and more people in the United States have caught on to the fact that they were deceived going into this war. I have confidence in the good sense and the decency of the American people.
Howard Zinn, Professor Emeritus of History at Boston University, author of A People's History of the United States. Professor Zinn, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.